You're listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Well, hello, Jessica.
Hi, Mike. Thank you for having me on the podcast.
Jessica, for those that don't know you or haven't come across you yet, give us your name and a little snapshot of why we're talking.
Of course. I'm Dr. Jessica Louie, and I'm really passionate about helping pharmacists and healthcare professionals clear the clutter out of their lives, both physically and emotionally, so we can all focus on what matters most, get out of states of overwhelm and burnout. So I, you know, do this by coaching on burnout and coaching with the KonMari method. And I'm also a board certified critical care pharmacist and work full time as an associate professor at a school of pharmacy.
Tell me again who your audience is for your body and soul and surrounding cleanup. Who is that?
Mm-hmm. So I really target pharmacists and healthcare professionals and use what I call the Clarify, Simplify, Align method I've created to walk people through getting out of that frustration, overwhelm state that they may feel with burnout and get into, you know, having less stress in their life, more energy in their lives. And of course, I've worked with other people outside of healthcare, but that's, you know, where I target on my podcast and, you know, what I target when I work virtually or in person with people.
How have you made that decision to niche down to healthcare? Because obviously you've had to make that decision with your podcast too, for example, to say I'm the ultimate coach for any profession versus pharmacy. And how have you decided so far that pharmacy is a big enough niche? And I suppose another question could be, how have you decided to not even go smaller, you know, to like niche down to just pharmacy executives or busy community pharmacists or something? Has sitting at that pharmacy level seemed to have been a pretty good choice, at least this far?
That's a great question, Mike. I think that, you know, when I first got into my small business and entrepreneurship back about 4 years ago, I, you know, had leaned out of the pharmacy and healthcare profession actually because I wanted to really target women and, you know, finding confidence, living intentionally and everything. And really over the past 2 years, you know, I've worked with business coaches, invested like about $30,000 in professional and business development. And that's really where I decided to niche back down. That's why I launched the Burnout Doctor podcast that targeted pharmacists. And you know, I have been in the pharmacy field for over 10 years now, and I understand where the profession's going. I still work in it. I still see my students at the university who are gearing up to become professionals in it. So I really wanted to give back to our profession and combine how we declutter into the healthcare field and really target burnout from a perspective of what we can do to change our lives in the next 10, 15 minutes versus waiting for an organization or management to change. So that's really where I'm approaching it from. The rest of my family is in medicine as physicians, so I also understand their world really well. So I also enjoy working with some of those professionals, but I do think, you know, pharmacy is definitely a large enough profession to target. You know, I work with a lot of women pharmacists in my 12-week programs, but I, so that, you know, the small groups of women are, you know, feel comfortable within their 5 to 7 female pharmacist groups for over 12 weeks. But of course, you know, I take on other pharmacists for one-on-one coaching outside of those smaller programs.
All right. So tell me again, when you were wider, do you feel that you were too generic, that you weren't, people didn't see you as specialized enough? Or tell me again why you went to medical or pharmacy. Was that a business move?
I think that, you know, it was both in terms of aligning, you know, my personal values with what I was doing, and also from a business perspective. Everyone tells you in a niche and everyone tells you to narrow down, and you're skeptical at first because targeting a smaller audience, but it actually helps resonate and share your story with people that understand what you're going through, because I've lived it. The person I'm talking to is the person I was 4 or 5 years ago. So I know the story behind it. I know what people are feeling. So I think that it's a lot easier to relate to one another and just talk about, you know, how we're going to overcome some of these challenges.
I think you're right, where at first you're tempted to go wider. And I suppose if you have a very narrow focus on your product, you can go fairly wide. But if you're coming in as either a business coach or something like that, you're competing against the best of the best of the Gary V's. And so one of the areas that those people don't have is narrowing it down into, let's say, pharmacy, as long as it's big enough. And with, you know, 300,000 pharmacists in the U.S. and only God knows how many in the, well, God or Wikipedia knows how many in the whole world, you know, it seems like a big enough group to make your mark. All right, here's what disgusts me, Jessica. Every time I'm on LinkedIn or something like that, there's always another group for women. And women are 2/3 of pharmacy at least, and everybody's there helping women, but there's nobody out there for us poor men, you know, the men that are the minorities in this industry. And how come no one's helping us men?
I think that's a great question. I think that, you know, it also goes back to when pharmacists are willing to ask for that help. And I think that sometimes people don't understand the value of asking for help and being vulnerable during that time. So I think that plays into it. But I definitely have, you know, worked with men, both, you know, in the decluttering process and in the burnout process. And they're just usually more willing to work one-on-one and not share a lot of things in a group setting. So that's why I haven't done a co-ed type of group coaching program for right now. But if there are people out there listening who are interested and willing to be, you know, in a group setting, that's definitely something I'm willing to target and to coach towards.
Do you focus in your marketing? Do you say women a lot, or do you just say, you know, pharmacists?
It depends. So I say pharmacists a lot. The reason why I say women sometimes is because, you know, my first business, this is actually my third business in the last 4 years, was on petite fashion blogging and outfits for women. There were no men outfits really, except for scrubs and healthcare attire related to scrubs, because my boyfriend was in the pictures and things. So that's one of the reasons why people find me through that avenue. So I talk to a lot of women because they want to feel confident in their outfits, feel good because our clothing is closest to our hearts and our skin and everything. So it really kind of depends on how people funnel in and find me.
You said petite. What does that refer to?
So petite in terms of it can be more difficult to find clothing if you're petite in size and height. So that's...
It was focused on that.
You know, other people, of course, benefited from it, because basically the petite women benefited when I said my size I was wearing and were to find the product if they wanted the exact same one. And then people who aren't petite, you know, found it in terms of how to mix and match things and ideas and then shop their own closets or shop other products that I wasn't directly recommending.
And then that word closet, someone told me that before. I was watching a show about a couple years ago and someone said, I wish I had their closet or something like that. And I'm like, what the hell are you talking about, their closet? But then I realized that it meant like their collection of clothing, basically. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know that. So I got to get more cultured. Tell me, Jessica, the Cone Marie, is it?
Yes. So some people say Cone Marie, Cone Marie. I am fine either way.
That's the name, actually, of this lady that I see on TV doing these things. The organization.
Yes. So basically, it's a combination of our first and last name. So Marie Kondo is from Japan, and she's the one who popularize this philosophy of how you declutter and simplify your life so that you have lifelong change. So it's different than other organizing techniques that are out there.
Yeah. It's interesting because I know one of her methods, I think, is like you pull everything out and just, you know, you pull everything out and put it on the bed or something like that, if I have that right. And that kind of reminds me of David Allen, who I'm a fan of, with his book, Getting Things Done. And he talks about, we don't use our mind as a calendar, so why do we use it as a do list? But just getting everything out, just kind of doing a brain dump before we're able to do something with it. Are you online with most of your things, like your coaching and that, or are you face-to-face?
I am both. So when I started on the KonMari method, I was certified in 2018. There's about 200 certified coaches, consultants under Marie Kondo because, of course, coming to the United States, she couldn't do everything herself. So she doesn't work one-on-one with a lot of people. Her certified consultants do. So that's when I work one-on-one, where we're in your home together for, you know, 4, 6, 8 hour sessions, and then we're working through the process. And what you said is somewhat true about pulling things out, because the method really talks about you're not going room by room, what a lot of people think when you're organizing. We're tackling one category at a time, so you don't miss anything. So if you pull out all of the jackets from your house, they may not only be in your bedroom closet, they could be in coat closet, storage, you know, people store their winter items separately. So we're finding all those items and pulling them out so that you can go one by one and see if the items spark joy, so that you're not missing something from that subcategory. So I'll work one-on-one with people in person that way, and I'll travel to clients as well in different cities. My preferred method now is working virtually so that we get into also combining it with burnout coaching, where we are virtually seeing each other on video once a week and then doing trainings on my online portal in between, and then checking in through apps like Voxer or email to keep up that accountability step. So I have those options. And then for people that aren't ready to really invest in themselves, I have more online course options that are more DIY type, so that you can get started. But if you need that accountability, you can upgrade later.
Yeah. If you could do this full time or as much as you wanted to, let's say it gave you the money you wanted, would you ditch pharmacy?
So right now, no, I do advocate that, you know, I don't coach people out of the profession. You know, my class.
No, but you, would you ditch it?
So if I would go full time in order to help more people, I would consider leaving my full time position or going part time so that I can still, you know, work with the students and still have an impact on, you know, student development at the university setting.
Okay, but I'm going to press you on this now. If this is really going well, are you just teasing me that you would stay in pharmacy? If you really were doing well on this, would you really want to stick around in pharmacy and help people? Or would you finally give it up?
So I think that, you know, I still, no matter what happens, would have some type of foot in the profession, either per diem or, you know, most of my clients are pharmacists anyway, so it'd still feel like I'm in the profession and speaking at, you know, pharmacy conferences or pharmacy events. So I wouldn't feel like I left the profession, but if you're talking about being employed by someone else, that would be a consideration so that I have a larger impact.
Even if you were doing this full time, you would be, with all the pharmacists you would be speaking to and so on, you would feel like right back in, you'd feel like you were right in the profession, basically, by doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the standard answer is always, yeah, I would keep my feet wet. But I don't know. If I was hired for something that was something I started that was really cool, I don't know if I would necessarily, I don't know if anybody would want me anymore.
I think it depends on, you know, the culture of the institution and organization of how they support small businesses and passions outside of a typical type of corporate environment.
I was talking to someone the other day, and I think it depends on how much red tape there is to keep a part-time job and so on. You know, how much you have to, can you just slide into it once in a while, or do you have to really be, you know, deeply involved in it? Are you still full-time pharmacist capacity?
Yes, I'm still full-time.
You're doing this outside of that week in the pharmacy.
Yes. So a lot of times, you know, my virtual coaching sessions are done during one day a week, usually in the afternoons, evenings, depending on time zones. And then I will work one-on-one in people's homes, either weekdays at night from about 5 to 9 p.m. and then on weekends, you know, all day or part day. So I format it so that I can host a lot of online things, you know, after 5 p.m. or work with clients that way. So I probably spend, you know, I will honestly say when I first started my business, the first 2 years, I was spending a good 40 hours a week. And now I've built up systems where they're on more on autopilot, quote unquote.
Sure.
And quote unquote passive, even though, you know, nothing's really passive in life. Right. So I was able to diversify my income streams, you know, multiple ways so that some things run in the background.
Yeah, right.
And then I'll probably spend 20 hours a week on my businesses outside of work. And then there'll be, you know, some weeks that are a little bit more if I'm doing more VIP intensive sessions with people. Yeah.
How much time would you say you spend at work?
My full-time job is 40 hours a week.
40 hours a week. Yeah. So when you were starting up, you were doing like 40 hours plus another 40 hours mm-hmm. getting this going. Mm-hmm.
And that was, you know, kind of normal to me because I came out of residency and was about a year after my 2 year residency in critical care. So during residency, I was spending about 60 hours a week in the hospital. And I, you know, I felt like I spent more hours at the hospital than at my actual home with all the additional research I was doing. So, and then, you know, my partner, my boyfriend's also in medicine, finishing up his training. So he's, you know, he works 60, 70 hours a week as well. So it's very manageable right now in the time of our life.
When I think about stuff that brings me joy, it's basically my phone and my computer and then food.
Mm-hmm.
But I suppose there's other stuff that brings me joy. I just don't really realize it.
Yeah, I would think, you know, more towards like your vacations you went on or the experiences you're having, you know, these podcasts you're meeting people on. So those are things that a lot of people, you know, when we remove a lot of the physical clutter from our lives, we can really focus on the experiences, memories that we create in our lives and make room and energy for those. So that's really, you know, what we're trying to get at in terms of this is a lifestyle change. This is not, you know, a typical organizing type of philosophy.
Gotcha. And that's what Marie also teaches then with that.
She does. Yeah.
Because some people have so much stuff that they think brings them joy and they're worried about keeping their car clean and keeping their things in order and whatever that it's like that maybe doesn't bring them as much joy as if they let that go. They might enjoy more doing other things, you know, going to concerts or whatever that they're able to free time up without things that are probably not bringing them the joy they kind of thought it was bringing them.
Right. I think that, you know, in today's society, because we're so interconnected and you can see a lot of people's lives online, you know, realizing that it's their highlight reel is an important step. And then also realizing that, you know, when you are at, you know, at the end of your life and reflecting on it, what are you going to say, you know, that you wanted more of? Are you going to say that you wanted, you know, a better car or better clothing? You know, most of us wouldn't say that. Most of us wouldn't say we wanted to work more either. We'd want to say that we spent more time with our loved ones and our family and friends. So, you know, it really gets down into like a deeper dive into how you set up your ideal lifestyle. And that's what I think a lot of people have missed with the KonMari method, because the Netflix show did not really emphasize this.
Yes,
And then I've trained with Simon Sinek in the Start With Why process. So that's why my method is clarify first, then you simplify, and then you align your work into your life. So if you skip the clarify stage, you may not make it through the simplify stage when difficulties arise.
Yes,
And you're going through your family photos and you don't see the value because you don't remember the legacy you want to leave.
Yeah. I was thinking that if it was at the end of my life and somebody asked what I would have liked more of, I think I'd probably say more life.
Mm-hmm.
But who knows? Maybe you're at the age where you don't. Where do you picture this, let's say, in 10 years? Would you like to be doing exactly the same thing or more focus on this business and so on?
I think that it will grow and evolve with time, but you know, my focus over the next 5 to 10 years is really to bring KonMari into the healthcare profession and how we are going to spark joy at work, working in healthcare. Mm. I think that a lot of things right now, you know, burnout is a big topic throughout healthcare, not just pharmacy and physician world, but, you know, everyone who's working in healthcare and how we can help impact it while still keeping our professionals in those, in our profession after training for so many years. You know, it's crazy to look at my critical care colleagues and how many people have left critical care. And it's really difficult to replace those people. It's really difficult for the patients that aren't getting their best care either. So, you know, I see myself as, you know, combining that decluttering and burnout into healthcare as, you know, simple steps we can take, you know, both as individuals and then potentially moving forward in more of the corporate setting, working with those corporate entities on more workshops and trainings for their employees so that we support our employees to stay and retain in those companies. And I think that's what's a big problem right now as people leave.
Do you see any stereotypes in pharmacy regarding this method? In other words, are pharmacists, are they more hoarders in their physical life or in their brain? Are they more hoarders or are they not as open to joy or are they not as open to help? Are you seeing anything that you think is maybe more of a trait of either pharmacists or medical professions that maybe you wouldn't see as much in other professions, for better or worse?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question, Mike. Actually, I see a couple things happening. You know, one, as pharmacists and in healthcare in general, a lot of us come out of school and we're not used to making six figures. So there's this perception of keeping up with the Joneses, of, you know, increasing your spending to accommodate your new salary. And I think that's where, you know, one of the, in hindsight, could be mistakes that people are making because they're not looking out for their financial freedom and how they're going to bring joy into their lives without feeling trapped with their debt and with their new salary raise. So that's something unique, I think, to pharmacists and physicians in general. And then other thing I think that is unique is, you know, we train for so many years. I personally trained for 9 years into my board certification. And, you know, most pharmacists train between seven to 10 years, and MDs train, you know, between 10 and 14 years. Yeah. So when we get to the end of our training, I find that a lot of people are like, okay, I'm done. You know, I'll do my CEs, my continuing education like I need to, but they don't realize that there's a value in still having a coach that is working with them as accountability, because yes, they have some mentors, but if you don't have some consistency where if you're investing in a coach for your fitness, your workout regimens, you know, why are you not looking at a coach, you know, when you've reached the highest level of your profession to give you feedback and keep moving towards new goals in your career? And I think that's where healthcare professionals don't view that as a value add. Whereas when I'm working with people that come from more of a corporate setting, they're very used to that because they have executive leadership training programs and they have corporate coaching type of programs.
Right.
But in healthcare, we're less likely to ask for help when we need it because we're supposed to be at the top level of our profession now. And, you know, we're not used to that because, you know, in residency or during fellowship training is kind of, you know, not something that was looked upon positively. And think that now we need to allow some of that to happen for the well-being of the profession as a whole.
You know, let's say like 10 years ago, I don't imagine that you knew you'd be doing this.
Right.
Do you think you were drawn to this because of your DNA or your culture or your interests, or do you think that you were saved by this? You know, for example, let me put it this way. There's some people that become nutritionists because they've always have been slender and liked nutrition. There's some people who like nutrition now because they were quite overweight in the day and now they've learned it and now they're trying to share it. Which side would you say you fall into?
I think it's difficult to say one way or the other. I think, you know, both, you know, the KonMari method, decluttering, simplifying did save me from my burnout in pharmacy and helped me see individual changes. I also see that, you know, I've undergone a lot of personal and professional development over the last 4 years. And I see that, you know, it partly was in my DNA in terms of on the Colby assessment, I'm a quick start. You know, I like to take action and get things done right away. I don't like to, you know, wait and put them off. And that's, you know, been some challenges in my business then because I don't want to just wait for the next year to implement a new initiative. So,
right.
But in terms of my culture, it definitely is something that I wasn't raised necessarily directly with because, yeah, you know, I was very much, I'm Chinese American. I was raised that you are in your career, you likely will stay with the same company through retirement, you'll retire, have a pension, all of these things, very stable. But at the same time, my mom owned her own business on the side as well. So there was a lot of disconnect of, you know, in today's society and as a millennial myself, is really unlikely. A lot of us will stay in the same companies. Some companies may not even exist in 30 years as they're new startups and things, and there's no pensions, you know, where I work. So
yeah,
there's a continuum and a growth phase more where we can grow as individuals more in today's society. So I think there's more room for entrepreneurship and more room for diversification versus how I grew up in, you know, in the 90s.
Yeah. You were burned out yourself.
I was. Mm-hmm.
But then all of a sudden you decide to spend 80 hours a week trying to figure out a way to not be burned out. I'm joking, but I mean, tell me about your burnout and what changed to, I'm assuming you're not as burned out or else you wouldn't be able to bring your story to the masses.
Mm-hmm. I think that's definitely a great question. So in my opinion, burnout is not something that you cure or that you solve. You know, there's ways to reset it and then have prevention strategies. So I don't think that, you know, there's one cure for it. And things ebb and flow in life. So that's kind of how I view burnout.
Yeah.
But first I had to realize I had it because no one was talking about it in 2014. Very widely, very openly. So I didn't know what I had. You know, it was very high levels of stress that led to it. But, you know, the combination of residency and my first year in academia that led to it. And, you know, I always tell people that, you know, lazy people don't burn out. I mean, So, you know, you're kind of self-inducing a lot of that and not realizing what the exhaustion and the cynicism and decreased self-efficacy are really doing to your overall life, not only at work. So,
and that's how you would, and that's one definition for you of burnout, of the exhaustion, non-efficacy, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So I view it as, you know, the three characteristics. So exhaustion usually is the first one, physically and emotionally. I also add in, you know, spiritually and mentally to that. And then the cynicism where you have a negative viewpoint about your work life or about the environment. And then finally, you have decreased self-efficacy. So you don't feel like you're making a difference. And where I had a lot of that, you know, part of it stemmed from my research experience and, you know, setting up realistic expectations of how long research would be published. It took 3 to 5 years for 5 of my projects to be published. So that was a long road and a long process. And you setting up the realistic expectations up front can really help reset those feelings. And then how you bring work home with you, how you set up healthy boundaries. And then, you know, how you view the profession and where it's moving.
Yeah.
You know, I came from a very progressive program at the University of Utah back to California. I trained in California for my pharmacy school, but, you know, the level of hospital pharmacy practice is not the same. And it needs a lot of work in California, specifically in Los Angeles. And for organizations to realize that is a long process.
Yeah. When you say cynicism, that's really interesting to me because would you say cynicism is a natural result of already being burned out and then you just can't see joy in anything, so you're cynical? Or is it kind of leading up to it? Is it like almost like a warning sign? Tell me more about that cynicism.
It could be both in terms of, so basically you start to lose empathy for your ability to care, and that could be your ability to connect with patients. It could be your ability to connect with staff or coworkers, and you lose this feeling that you feel isolated. You might begin to feel numb about your work. So yeah. It could be a warning sign that, oh, I'm not, I'm having more of a negative viewpoint towards my patients, and maybe something's going on, and I need to look at what's happening in my life and reset that. Right. Or it could be like you're already in burnout and now you need to take some steps to really get back to finding joy again. So it could be either or. But once you start feeling numb, you know, where, you know, I work in the ICU, if, you know, a death of a patient doesn't make, like, induce some type of feeling in you, then you might be needing to look at that and really dive a little deeper.
That's really interesting, because I've seen that before in me, just a, you know, cynicism. And sometimes I'll get it here in the pharmacy, I suppose, dealing with the, you know, the insurers and things like that. And then it leads on to maybe other areas. Jessica, what were you able to learn or do to help with the burnout that you had?
Mm-hmm. So, you know, first, you know, I realized that, you know, there was a problem in my life, and then, you know, sought help for it. So both, you know, through the KonMari method, through STEM and CINIC, Start With Why programs, and, you know, just diving deeper into what was going on in my life. So what really helped was clarifying, you know, my life values and my purpose. So getting those very clear, because, you know, our family grew up with, you know, values and missions and things, but we didn't actually talk about them and write them down. So as a young adult, now it's like you want to write those down and be very clear about them, because that's where all your decisions are going to be made from.
Sure.
So that's, you know, was my clarify step. And then after I did that, you know, physically decluttering. So basically I took those four clutter steps and first did the physical part in my home, in my office, then started on the mental part. So a lot of mental clutter stems from digital devices and, you know, computers or phones. So decluttering that, that means, you know, how can people reach you? How can people notify you? So you're changing that from being reactive to being proactive. So that's how you check your email and all those things.
Checking your email more proactively, like instead of someone wanting me to respond all the time, it's like, this is my proactive time to either push out or react, but it's a proactive reactive time.
Yes. So it's, you know, setting up those times maybe 2 to 3 times a day that you actually respond to email.
Right.
I'm a big advocate for inbox zero. So you get to 0 emails in your inbox daily. So I have, you know, a free, you know, 15-day challenge that a lot of my clients take so that they can achieve that. But basically, you're not allowing people to contact you for urgent things via email. You teach people how to contact you. So just like in the past where we only had landlines in phones in our houses, it's kind of going back to that where people are not just expecting a response from a text message right away. If they're going to need you, they're going to have to call you, and they're going to actually have to get through to that call. So I teach my clients how to stop all notifications, how to put your phone on do not disturb, how to time block that no one can contact you during certain times of the day, put it on airplane mode so that you're really focused and energized for that work. So there's lots of different ways to remove mental clutter, also from your schedule and your calendar. And then we move on to emotional clutter and how we process our feelings. So a lot of that is about journaling, bringing back gratitude, bringing back forgiveness into our lives. Because a lot of times we can look at social media and other things and not feel grateful for what we have in our lives. But a lot of us who live in the United States have a lot of good things going, and just writing down what we're grateful for that day can have a lot of positive impacts on your life. And there's a lot of different studies on that, but basically getting back into that. And then finally, the spiritual clutter of how do you bring your energy levels to your day? How are you present throughout the day so that you build trust with others? So that's really about mindfulness, you know, not doing two things at once. You're solo focusing on a task or a person. And then, you know, you can also bring in some type of meditation practices and things like that. So you are really tackling a lot of the different clutter aspects.
Yeah. Some of the listeners of this program know that I've got 10 children, and there's some areas in my life that are just a holy hell, like my garage and the basement, you know, and it's just like, as much as my wife and I try, you know, the kids will go down and try to find a wig that's in the Halloween box, you know, where instead of looking for it and then putting everything back in, you know, the whole contents of the box are everywhere. Mm-hmm. So my little havens of order are in my like phone, areas that nobody's allowed to go into. So my phone and, you know, my podcast and, but that's about all I really, and in my do list, I would say, you know, but that's about all I really have ordered in my life, but it's okay for now.
Well, so I would push back on that a little bit in terms of creating that calm type of sanctuary at your home. So that could be some small part of your home that you can create. And then also whatever you want in your home setting, you know, habit wise, we need to teach everyone else in our home how to do it. So I work with a lot of clients where I'm only working with, you know, one of the parents and the other person needs to teach everyone in the home how to do it. So let's say papers, for example, this is like a daily household activity in terms of like teaching everyone. This is the system we have in place of where you put your papers. We're going to process the papers either once a day or once a week, and they're going to go to the shred pile, recycle, or digitizing pile. So we will have a system in place. And once that system's in place, everyone has to, you know, one, buy into it, and two, follow it. And that takes, you know, potentially a few weeks, a few months to get used to. But then everyone is invested in, you know, how we keep our home tidy, how we want it to visually feel. It's not really about what it looks like. It's really how it makes you feel.
And you're working as a team to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big scanner, so I like to scan a bunch of stuff, because when my dad died a number of years ago, I was kind of responsible for going through his filing cabinet, and there was a lot of neat stuff in there, birthday cards from the kids and all that kind of stuff. I didn't really know what to do with them. So my theory was that I scan all my cards and stuff so that when I get older, two things. One is I can sit there and in my decrepit hospital bed and look through my Google Drive at all the nice birthday cards and stuff through the years. But also, then when I die, my kids, should they ever want to, they can just make copies of this and they can have memorabilia of that they were a part of through the years. The problem with that, here's the lesson I learned though, is when the kids make you a birthday card, when they draw one out for you, do not scan it right away and shred it right away. The trick the trick is to leave it around for about a month. Let the kids know you appreciate it. Then scan it and then shred it, because no one likes to see their birthday. And they don't understand my method, but someday they will and not feel so bad. Jessica, tell me about your podcast.
So I host the Burnout Doctor podcast. And, you know, actually, it was something I had been planning for a couple of years before I launched it. And looking back, you know, from my business coaching notes and everything, I had manifested it about 18 months before I actually launched it. So when it came time to produce it and, you know, name it and everything, you know, my business coaches really helped me niche down back into pharmacy and healthcare.
What does that word mean, manifested?
I manifested it. So basically, when you're setting up goals, I like to reverse engineer your goals from life goals down to back down to yearly goals, monthly, daily goals. So I had put it on, you know, this is my what part of my 3-year plan.
So manifested it mean you had it, that was your timing, your future timing of it, basically.
Yes. So basically you how I view manifesting is you're writing it down like it already happened. And the writing down step with pen and paper is like one of the most important steps of that. So yeah. I had planned out, you know, the last 2 to 3 years of my life of like, here's what I would like to have done and the month I would want things done. So I put down July 2019 is when I'll launch my podcast.
Yeah.
A year and a half before it actually happened. So then, you know, when I came back to that, I didn't even realize that that was on my list for 2019.
Yeah.
When I planned out my 2019 goals and everything, and I came back to that and was like, okay, I'm going to do this. I did an 8-week sprint to launch it. So basically, I put everything together in 8 weeks leading up to July 2019, and I launched with 8 episodes that you could listen to. And the format of it is really targeting pharmacists and healthcare professionals. How do you declutter, simplify your lives, and incorporate well-being and burnout prevention into your day-to-day life? So a lot of the episodes are very short, 10 to 20 minutes each. They are solo episodes of me addressing a topic. Right now, I don't really have guests on the podcast. There are no sponsorships, no ads on the podcast.
I just have guests because I'm lazy.
Well, I think guests are definitely fun to talk to and everything. And I've been on a lot of podcasts. It just hasn't worked with my scheduling right now.
Yeah.
Of bringing a lot on because I batch out my episodes in advance usually.
Yeah, kind of the Netflix model.
Yeah. And then now they all release once a week on Thursdays. So every Thursday there's an episode, and I just finished up a financial well-being series of 4 episodes and moving on from there.
Did you put 4 episodes out on Thursday, or would you do that in 4 consecutive Thursdays?
So now it's each Thursday, yeah. So one every week.
One every week for 4 weeks and then on to another one.
Yes. The only time I launched all 8 episodes was at the beginning of the podcast so that you could...
You want to give that big shock and awe kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, give a lot of information up front. It was a lot of information related to burnout, and then I went on to more decluttering stuff after that.
Yeah. Do you do all of the parts of the podcast yourself, or do you have a helper?
So I do everything myself. So that was one of the reasons why when I got into blogging and online business, I wanted to learn how to do everything myself, even if in the future I would hire team members to do it for me. So I actually do enjoy a lot of the tech background. I actually considered going into informatics and pharmacy.
Yeah, right.
So, so yes, I record on Adobe Audition. I edit it myself. I use Libsyn podcast hosting and do all the graphics and everything with the blog post with the episode. So I really enjoy all of those parts. And, you know, I definitely enjoy listening to podcasts. That's one of the reasons why I started a podcast myself.
Yeah.
I was doing some YouTube videos and other things online, and I realized, well, what type of media do I consume myself? And it was mostly podcasts because, you know, 30 to 45 minutes in the car back and forth from work, that's the easiest thing to listen to besides audiobooks. So that's one of the reasons why, okay, I want to get back into my community in that way.
I found that the three things that, and you broke them down how I would see them, but I've enjoyed I certainly enjoy talking to people like you. That's great. And I've met so many people that are willing to be on a podcast that you probably wouldn't be able to just call them and say, hey, you want to talk for a half hour? You know, that's been really cool. I also enjoyed the technical part of it, both the recording now, the mixing and so on. And I also enjoy the social media aspect of promoting it and so on. So, and frankly, I like having the listeners. I don't know if I would do it if there was only one listener or 0 listeners, but that's fun too, to have a way to spread the message. And I've told my children, it's like, there's never been a time like this in history where, one, there's no middleman, there's no editor we have to get by, and it's dirt cheap. I mean, it's free basically if you have a mic and, or even a phone, you know, you can record into, and that's about it. Everybody can get their chance to do things like this. So there's just never, ever been a time like that in the past.
I agree. We have a lot of great opportunities.
I knew a guy one time. He said his kid was good at a certain sport. And He might have been, but the issue is that sport was not very popular, and it took a lot of money to be part of that sport. And so he wasn't maybe one of my favorite guys. So I would say, yeah, his kid's good at this, but there's so few people that have tried this that you don't know how good he is. He's just got the money, and he picked the one to do that. But you compare that to something like, you know, street ball or soccer, where anybody in the world can do it pretty cheaply, and you got to be really good to rise to the top because you're competing against the world. And so that's something too that's happening now with podcasting and YouTube music and things like that, where anybody can do it, but to really make it big now, you're competing against the soccer players, you know, figuratively, of the world, instead of just the people who had money or connections to get in front of certain producers and things like that.
Right. I think that it's a way that I view it as a way to reach beyond the classroom, because, you know, I have, you know, 100 students at the university, but to reach beyond that so that you can reach globally, where people can listen to the podcast all over the world, get the help that they need that they might not get at their own university or in their own developing country, is really impactful and great to connect then with other pharmacists or other people listening throughout, you know, the United States and the world that you would never meet. Like, I would never have met a lot of my fellow pharmacists. They're also entrepreneurs, or just pharmacists in general, because a lot of us don't have the luxury to go to the conferences every year other things in person. So being able to connect online, either through the podcast or videos or social media, has been so great to learn other people's stories then.
I've really enjoyed it. What would you tell a pharmacist? So we have quite a few community pharmacists listening to the program, along with quite a few other ones, but I know we have a group of community pharmacists. What would you be telling them if they're at home and everything's nirvana at home, you know, perfectly, but then they come into this like cluster at work and it's like they just know it's going to be a disaster day after day?
So I tell them that they're in control of their life. So, you know, it's up to you what you want in your life. So if you don't know what you want in your life, that would be the first thing I would, you know, write out of what's important to you and what legacy you want to leave. And then I would say that you can make changes in your own life in the next, you know, 10, 15 minutes that would impact your day to day at work. So that's what I call like finding joy at work. All of those steps are related to what you will physically or mentally change and remove clutter. So there's definitely different techniques of how you know, let go of some of that frustration at work that we could talk about. And then really writing down of, you know, if you don't feel like you could leave or change your hours or change your situation right now, what is holding you back? Is it because of, you know, the financial burden? And then we can dive deeper into, you know, why you feel trapped in your financial situation. And I think that for a lot of pharmacists, that means that there was too many investments up front of new houses and all these things that went down. And is that really adding value to your life? So I actually work with a lot of people that end up downsizing and clearing a lot of those financial commitments that they felt tied to away from their life, so that they can go part-time or start a small business to diversify their income, or, you know, not necessarily follow the FIRE movement, but basically don't wait until retirement to enjoy your life. You can still enjoy your life now as you progress. So there's definitely different things people can do. And also, I think that it's really important that people know that they're not alone. Like, what they're feeling with their work situations is not is very common in today's pharmacy and healthcare world. So please don't feel like you're alone and no one understands what you're going through. We definitely understand. And there's definitely ways that you can change how you're feeling.
Some of it's intrinsic that, you know, there might be some ways to relook at things at work and take a different view of it. But sometimes it's like, you're not going to win in that situation. You might have to make some changes. And to make those changes, you might have to make some other changes, you know, first.
Mm-hmm.
I remember years ago, it's funny the stuff that I would focus on. Like, I would look at like a 17-year-old kid that I hired, and he might be leaning on the broom or, you know, chewing the fat with somebody or something. And I took that so personally back then. I'd blame them. How could they disrespect me and not give me a full time's work, you know? Or else I'd blame myself. And it's like, how come I can't motivate? What's wrong with me that I can't motivate that person to do this, you know? And now, like 10 years later, I'm like, ah, what the hell? The kid's 17. I'm not going to change the world with him. You know, if he gets the job done or whatever, and I want to get in there enough to let him know that I'm pretend that I'm paying attention to him and stuff. But a lot of it's the focus, you know, where I can shift my focus, I suppose.
And I mean, it's also, you know, for a lot of employees that are feeling dissatisfied or frustrated right now, it's also making sure that their managers and supervisors know, like, what's important to them, what are their personal goals. Because a lot of times, you know, we don't actually talk about those, and it might be not be the ones that people assume you're striving for. It might be that you want better work-life alignment and integration, harmony, or it might be that you are working towards a new certification or, you know, development within the company, and how can you grow within that same company. So just getting down into that at the individual level can be really important.
Yeah. I think a lot of what I'm learning as I get older, it seems like there's a lot of benefit to listening, not listening with the expectation of either side that something is necessarily going to happen. You know, it seems like I would never want to listen to somebody because I always felt like that meant pressure that I had to do what they were suggesting or so on. I didn't want to let them down and so on. But as I'm getting older now, it's like I think I'm a better listener. And then it's like, all right, you wanted A, B, and C. It's like, well, thanks a lot for sharing. It's like, there's no way in hell we can do any of those, but thanks for sharing. But at least somewhere, you know, it changes things a little bit in your head, I suppose. What kind of people do you want contacting you, and how should they be contacting you?
So the best place to start is to visit my website, Dr. Jessica Louie, drjessicalouie.com, and you can see if these things resonate with you on the Burnout Dodger podcast. And then there's lots of freebies there to download: the Burnout Workbook, the Decluttering Workbook, and the Joy at Work programs. And, you know, people can always reach out via email or send me a message on LinkedIn is where I like to hang out.
And this could be anybody from a student to someone who's ready to retire that needs some of that either physical or kind of a mental cleanup.
Yes, it could be anyone in the pharmacy profession. And then if you have any friends or colleagues in healthcare that are needing some help, you can always point them towards the podcast.
Yeah. Well, that's great, Jessica. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Mike.
So quite the pleasure. Thanks a lot, Jessica.
Thank you for having me on the podcast.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Please subscribe for all future episodes.